Welcome to Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast. We are your hosts, Hannah Elizabeth
and Kate Mitchell. This is a place where you can find true crime tales, morbid mysteries and all things spooky.
We are two scousers with a true crime and red wine passion. Expect wine reviews, a few howls and much more.
Our podcast does include graphic content and explicit language. Discretion is advised.
So grab a belly, it's about to get heavy. Hello.
Welcome back to episode two.
We're back for episode two.
Of Don't Talk to Strangers.
How did you feel like episode one went after all that time?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I made up to be back. I feel good to be back in like the swing of things. And
back in the hot seat.
And it is something that like, you know what I find? You forget your passions sometimes. So like, because I've been doing this research and talking about it more with you, I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, I love it. I knew I loved it, but like, it's reignited it in me.
I feel like because we know most cases, obviously not all of them, but we've watched all the documentaries and all that.
Yeah.
We kind of run out, don't we? Like when it's me and you talking, but then going back over these, there's all details that you're like, oh my God, I forgot about that. Like, sorry, this eyelash is giving me a bog eye because the fringe is weighing down on the eyelash, so it's like Eeyore.
I mean, I don't think they can see that. I don't know.
Good, hope not. But I've got me Friday the 13th.
I know, can you see that?
I don't know, but I'm literally repping over here. Jason, you know, big love.
She loves Jason.
Yeah.
He's air one. But no, welcome back. I hope you've loved episode one. We've got a new fresh case for you.
So excited.
Serial killer.
So obviously getting back into the swing of things the other week, it was so good to bring it back, especially on Halloween.
I know.
I think it's just about getting back into the swing of it, getting into the flow, getting 100%. Used to recording again. So we will be improving, everyone.
Yes.
We're still here with Jack, doing us proud there.
What have you been up to this week, Han?
Oh my God, I've been so busy this week, but I'll tell you like a horror-related thing that I've done this week.
Oh yeah, actually, go on.
I went to see The Terrifier 3, have you seen it?
No, you know I won't.
Have you seen one or two?
No, you know
I
won't.
Oh my God, so like I'm going to sound like such a geek here, right? But they brought The Terrifier 3 out and all the reviews were like, they were going to ban it in France. Like,
I know what you're on about actually. People were vomiting and all that, yeah.
People were like vomiting, fainting, 11 people walked out on the opening. So for me, that is a massive green flag. Like, I need to see the pictures.
I'm crying. That's a green flag to me. I'm like red flag.
I am running to the pictures to see it. As soon as I've got like 5 minutes, I'm going to the pictures to see it. And it is so gory. Like, he really pushed the boundaries with this film.
See, this is the thing that not ruins it for me, but like, I do love a good horror. I love a good thriller. I love the adrenaline of being scared.
Yeah, I love it.
But when it comes to gore, if it makes me think that I'm watching something illegal,
something bad,
I don't like the feeling it gives me. Like, I've seen so many things in the past where I'm like, this is sick, but then there's a scene and I think, no, this should not. I feel like the police are going to raid my house any second and go, why are you watching? It's illegal.
I mean, like, for me, like,
but you love it.
We don't make good horrors anymore. Like, we actually don't. You know, you'll never beat the old ones, but this, for me, give everything, you know? So
really?
The opening scene was, like, people in the pictures with jaw on the floor. It was, like, absolutely graphic. But, for me, what it gave was, you know, like, in the 80s and that, we had, like, the proper, like, iconic Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger. I watch, like, these horror films from, like, a geeky point of view, and I'm watching it thinking, like, oh, my God, like, Art the Clown, like, we've brought it back here.
What's his name?
Art the Clown, and he's brought back like such a slasher. We haven't had it for years, and it gives me like old school vibes, but it's not for the faint hearted. Like, it's very gory, but I absolutely loved it. And no doubt about it, I will have an Art the Clown decoration next year for Halloween.
I spend a fortune
like on shite, don't I?
Yeah.
But
it's not shite
to me. Like, I adore, like, collectible stuff, so I'll buy, like, weird film stuff.
No, the weird is when she was, like, when I had my Ouija board and I was in her house and I went, sorry, you've got a Ouija board?
There's one in there right now.
No, that's not good, Hannah. Do you know what I mean? Like, buy the props, buy all the stuff. Don't have actual things that can, like, possess you.
And it's also the middle of my Halloween tree every year was always the planchette and the Ouija board. It was like the centrepiece. And then in me dining table was a Ouija board, the centrepiece. But remember when I bought that like really sick oak one that that man
from
made
LA,
me?
Was it or something?
No, I got the man to make me. Yeah, it. No, so now no. It's in my friend's. She's got it. But yeah, I just love all spooky things. So where I collect like horror stuff, what I'm saying is the point I'm getting to is he's made Arthur Clown a bit of like a thing now.
Yeah.
Like so he's getting have, in the category with like Mike Myers and that.
He'll so be on your tree.
He'll be on my tree next year. Like it was sick. I feel like you should see it. If you don't like gore, don't watch it. But you know people who like horror, they mm-hmm. tend to grow out of the older they get, they can't watch gore more.
Me. Mm-hmm. This is me. Yeah. Years ago, I would be like the Hostel. So
I loved Hostel.
I would be like,
wow.
Give me it more and I'd watch it and I was a child. And then as I've gotten older, I watch it now and like I don't know if I'm putting myself in their position or I feel different feelings.
Oh yeah,
now.
It'll just be like more.
It affects me more and I think this is illegal. I feel like I'm watching something I shouldn't be watching. It makes me, it gives me that horrible like doom.
I mean,
feeling.
I could sit and talk about this all day. I know. So I need to shut up. But Quentin Tarantino had something to do with Hostel. I don't know if he made it, but he had something to do with it. And
that
Hostel,
makes sense.
Wow.
No, that again. The story, I know the story's terrifying. Sick, but would I watch it now? No.
Oh, I've seen it a million
times. No, I wouldn't watch
times.
It now. I've watched it in the past, but I wouldn't watch it now. Not
I watched
chance.
That to chill out. We get to Terrifier 3 if you haven't seen it and you like horror, go and see it because...
Well, in my normal news of what I would watch, Menendez Brothers.
Oh my God.
I mean, this will probably be old news when this comes out.
Yeah, this will be old news.
But we've still got to address the fact that like... And I said this to you, I have known about the Menendez case for a long, long time. Listened to podcasts on it. Numerous times and it's never been portrayed in this way and I'm dead interested in it now.
Well, you know how much I am the biggest Ryan Murphy fan. People might like that.
She loves him.
I adore everything that man makes. Obviously I know there's like controversy around the whole how he's portrayed it and stuff, but wow, I absolutely loved it.
Well, no, I thought it was amazing. What I mean more by it is like I knew about the case. Two lads killed the parents for money. That mm-hmm. was always the storyline that I had ever been told, which is kind of the truth.
Yeah.
But it's, and it, there was always a mention of like the sexual abuse, but it's never
wow,
gone into this
heavy,
detail. And like, I'm now seeing it from a completely different angle. I don't know my opinion yet. It's still to be decided.
Well, I mean, can I just say, by the way, I really fancied both them actors.
No, unreal, by the
unreal,
way.
Like, stunning.
Where have they just popped out the scene
well,
from?
Well, he's made a new thing, which I'm watching at the minute, called Grotesquerie.
Oh, yeah.
And Lyle, the fella that plays Lyle, is in that as a priest. And I'm like, I need to be a nun. Like, wow. He is fucking
take
stunning.
Me, father.
Take me, babe. But anyway, yeah, ignore that. So then I watched the real, I don't think you've seen it yet, but the real documentary.
Oh yeah, I watched it.
See,
so
that really, I was split decision and then when I watched that, I was like, let them out.
But everything is always unbiased, like.
No, let them out.
Do you think?
Mm.
To be fair, I do believe they've served like plenty of time.
I don't think they'll kill again. I don't think they're not like, you know, serial killers.
Mm.
I do now lean more towards that I believe them and that they were abused.
No,
and
see, I do, and I do. I don't not believe them. I can't. I don't know my standpoint yet. I'm still very like.
I'm like, let them out. I'm on Kimmy K's side.
No, I love that Kim's like mates with the actors now and everything.
I know,
and
they've been in. Yeah. But I genuinely, like, I think the Ryan Murphy thing leaves you very 50-50, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But then when you watch the real thing, I was like, nah, like,
yeah,
I really believe them. And if that is true, what has happened to them, then...
It's awful.
I feel like it's time to get them out. So, yeah, I'm so invested in it. And haven't they got a retrial, is it in...
No, it was talk. I don't think it's been fully confirmed,
really?
But there was talk in November. So this is coming out in November, so it could have happened. Or,
get them out.
But I don't know if it's fully. they've submitted new evidence to basically reopen the trial. I don't think it's confirmed as a retrial. They've just submitted new evidence.
I don't think they'll like commit murder again. So
no, because they'll be now famous. They'll have bloody a reality TV show in 6 months if they got let out, and it'll be like following the Menendez brothers.
I'm
like,
behind them. I want them out. Okay. If I was on the jury, they'd be getting my... Yeah.
Also, would you not love to do jury duty?
Oh, my... But for, a big case.
Yeah, not parking tickets, not paid for. I'd be furious.
Like, yeah, let them worry there.
Like, my dad... Sorry, we will get into it, but it's funny because my dad did jury duty and I don't know the exact amount of months, but I think it went on for, 9 months. It was a big, big case. Like, you know, usually my brother did it, it's 2 weeks. Like... sometimes it can go on for long, obviously the case long it goes on, but his was a big, I think, big drug.
Shut up. Like, oh, I'd love it.
Gangster type thing. And I'd he wasn't allowed to go to the toilet on his own. Like, he had to be escorted by someone to
Why?
Go to, because someone could have interfered with the witness or interfered with the jury or... Like, he was on it for months and you get full pay and, like...
Oh, call me. Unreal. I would love it. Right, so today we're drinking...
Oh, yeah, sorry, the wine.
This is a dead, like, casual Common, one yeah. that we have all the time. I Heart Shiraz. Get this off Deliveroo all the time.
This is from Wesley Ave Shop.
Wesley Ave from Speak. So if you know the Wesley Ave Shop, big shout out to the Wesley Ave.
I actually love it in there.
I do. It's the best shop ever.
It's dead intimidating, but like I quite
no,
like
it's not,
it.
It's
I'm scared going in there. But...
This is I Heart Shiraz. So let me dead cheap. What, £6?
It was like I'm pretty sure it was £6.99.
It's your cheap shit, but it does the job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rich and spicy, bursting with ripe and juicy black fruit flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Try drinking it with red meat always. Or tomato-based pasta dishes, or enjoy on its own.
Which is what we do.
It's what we do all the time.
We read this code, ooh, yeah.
Like, as if we're, like, arse.
We've not eaten today, we're just like, woo.
Yeah, woo, on the red. I said that at least someone in Rome's drinking now at this time.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm smelling like I know what I'm talking about. The Shiraz originated near the ancient Persian city of the same name, Shiraz. There you go.
Hannah's facts of the week.
Oh, there's a big hair on it. But yeah, let's Sorry, down that's the bottle hair, and tell me a cheers. Lady. Scary shit. Cheers, bitch.
Grab a bevy.
It's about to get heavy.
Why did we ever think of that, by the way? Because I cringe every time.
Did I?
But it is true.
Are you probably got red wine?
No, you're fine.
I would get really, really bad red wine teeth before anyone else. It's weird.
She does. So this episode, we are covering the infamous...
I'm so excited for this one.
Eileen Wuornos.
Right, guys, I've got a button already, but this is one of...
It's been 0.1 second. No, this is what we're here for, though.
This is one Your of opinion. My favourite cases. Like, say, woman, you know, yeah. serial Female. Killer. Wow, the film Monster.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Did she win an Oscar for that?
It's a... I think so.
Charlize Theron.
I do mention it further down.
Like, if anyone hasn't seen this film, and Christina Ricci, is that yeah. how you say it? The original her. Wednesday, by the way, not all this, like,
New
bullshit
one.
On Netflix. Like, Christina Ricci or Ricci is in it. This film is fucking unbelievable. I think she won some massive award.
I think
for
it's
it.
An Academy Award. I do say it further down.
Like,
remember.
She's the most beautiful woman, Charlize Theron. Like, on the Dior outfit, like, da 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 da.
Shadow.
And how.
Dior.
How she transforms into Eileen and the way she carries it, everything about it is just.
Unreal.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And this story, I've got loads to say on this.
Good.
Like, I'm really passionate about this story.
That's what we're here for. Well,
I'm going to gag into it.
Well, good. Basically, I'm going to cover early life murders and then kind of controversies around her because obviously mental health, being a female, you know, what she went through. So,
yeah, I'm
and then
just
going to
say,
conclude.
I feel like with this one, I do like back her a lot.
Oh, my opinions change yeah. many, many times on this.
Mine don't really.
No, I mean, like, at first, it's changed. Yeah. Since doing more research, it's changed
yeah.
in the good way, which mm-hmm. is going to back you.
I really back her.
So.
Obviously, not like that. I'm like, yeah, I really back her, but I back her. Like, there's a lot to this story.
But
so.
There is a lot to digest.
Take it away.
So, Eileen Wuornos is one of America's most notorious female serial killers, responsible mm-hmm. for the murders of 7 men between 1989 and 1990. Her story is infamous not only for the brutality of her crimes, but also the circumstances of her life, which was marked by severe abuse, trauma and hardship. Wuornos's crimes, trial and execution sparked widespread debate about mental health, the death penalty and the nature of female violence.
Mm-hmm.
So Eileen Carol Wuornos was born on February the 29th, 1956, and she is a... Pisces.
Oi, yes, girl.
That's why you connect.
We connect. See, Pisces were so emotional, were so in our feels. And I know, obviously, she fell really hard for her girlfriend.
Yeah.
And, you know, she did a lot out of love, you know. And a lot not, but She's in the emotion, she's in her feels, she's a Pisces gal.
She was born in Rochester, Michigan, to a deeply dysfunctional family. Her father, Leo Dale Pittman, was a convicted child molester.
Shut up.
Who was imprisoned.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Who was imprisoned at the time of her at the time of her birth, and later died by suicide in prison. So he's not really spoken about what's going to kill himself.
But she went and stayed with...
the man.
Okay. Or the auntie.
Her mother, Diane Warnos, abandoned Eileen and her brother Keith when Eileen was only 4 years old. The children were then sent to live with their maternal grandparents. Laurie and Britta Warnos in Troy, Michigan. Life with their grandparents was tumultuous. Laurie Warnos, the nan, was
tumultuous?
Tumultuous is like, it was very up and down. There was very like, lots of hardship happening. It was very like, if you something was tumultuous, it's like, fucking hell. It wasn't easy going. The opposite of easy going, essentially. Laurie Warnos was a violent alcoholic who subjected Eileen to physical and sexual abuse.
No, I didn't know this.
No, listen, it gets worse. By the time she was 11, Eileen was engaging in sexual acts in exchange for food, cigarettes and drugs.
What, at whom?
So, can you imagine? She became pregnant at 14. Allegedly due to rape by one of her grandfather's friends, and was sent to a home for unwed mothers, where she gave birth to a baby boy who was immediately put up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know who that is.
Oh, does he know?
Well, he won't know who his man is, unless he's chose to look after,
well,
go for it.
Know.
But it might, I don't know, with them cases, they might have closed those, like, files or records because of who she turned out to be. That would affect him.
Mm. I need to know.
After her baby was born, Eileen's life spiralled further out of control. She dropped out of school, became estranged from her family, and lived on the streets, engaging in sex work as a means for survival. Her tumultuous and abusive relationships and childhood contributed to a deep-seated anger and mistrust of people, especially men, which would later manifest in her violent murders and crimes. Warnos's killing spree began in 1989 and ended up with her arrest in 1991. So again, very short kind of span. Over the course of about a year, she murdered 7 men, all of whom she claimed had either raped her or attempted to rape her while she was working as a sex worker.
Well, some of them definitely did that.
Warnos shot each of her victims in remote wooded areas, and the nature of her crimes and claims of self-defence would become a central part of her trial and public perception. Let's get into it. Richard Mallory was a 51-year-old electronics store owner from Clearwater, Florida, and he was Warnos's first victim.
Hmm.
Mallory had a history of sexual violence, including previous conviction for attempted rape. Now, according to Warnos, Mallory picked it up along Interstate 75 while she was hitchhiking.
I think this is the one I'm thinking of.
After driving to a secluded area, Warnos claimed that he tried to rape her, prompting her to shoot him multiple times in self-defence. His body was found several days later in a wooded area. Mallory's background as a convicted sex offender played a significant role in the trial later, as Warner used this to justify her actions. However, the prosecution argued that Mallory's murder was premeditated. So this is what changed it for me. I think this one was a genuinely a try to rape her.
Yeah.
And she's gone, fuck you, bang, bang, bang.
I mean, I'm not like just going to go everything off the film, but if you have watched the film, there's that horrific scene in the secluded woods where he tries to rape her in the most like disgusting way, like it's horrendous. And if you were in that position, out of pure self-defense, she's pulled the trigger on him.
And
as a woman, I'm sorry, in that situation, and then you can see, like, you know, where she's been through abuse, and you know, not that it's an excuse because a lot of people have, but in her position, you can see, you know.
I agree.
When you're watching that film, it's so graphic and you're like, hang on a minute. But if not, she would have died.
But this is where my opinion change. I believe this was a genuine attempt at rape and she genuinely shot him in self-defense. But I think that triggered something in her because she's so traumatised.
She hates men.
So she's gone, fuck it.
Also, I can rob them and have a better life.
So that, and that's my way I'm like dead torn because I genuinely believe if this never had happened to her, would she have turned into a serial killer? Maybe not.
I just think her background and then leading up to like this, like an absolute pig treating her like that. It's a trigger.
Yeah. And I think, but then...
But then how do you know in that situation, like, if you've got to, fight for your life, do you know what I mean? And if people are treating you this way, how do you know?
No, I know. And honestly, I've gone back and forth on this. David Spears was aged 43. He was a construction worker from Winter Garden, Florida. Warnos picked him up along the highway and later shot him 6 times with a .22 caliber revolver. His body was found lying naked in a rural area of Citrus County. Warnos claimed that Spears had attempted to assault her, but her account of events leading up to the murder were vague and inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it will be inconsistent. She's traumatised. Like, she's not going to go, well, at 4:41 p.m.
Yeah, like, I don't think what happened to her, you know? She had such a traumatic...
I know. Imagine trading sex for food when you're 11.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's fucked. So, Charles Caddickston... No, it's not. It's Carskadden, sorry. A 40-year-old part-time rodeo worker.
Ooh, oh.
Love a cowboy.
A rodeo?
Oh, cowboy.
Cowboy.
From Missouri.
A cowboy hat.
No, all day. Sorry, he was from Missouri. He was shot 9 times by Warnos. His body was found in Pasco County, Florida. Like the other victims, Warnos claimed self-defense, stating that Carskadden had become aggressive and threatened her during their encounter. The excessive number of gunshot wounds raised doubts again.
Like a pure rage.
If her self-defense claims are true, suggesting that instead her actions are driven by rage.
Well, yeah, do you not think that's just a pure out of like anger and spite and hatred?
Yeah. But then that's like going against her defence. She's going, no, self-defence. So the rage is going against that. She needs defence, doesn't she, at this point?
I think self-defence, yeah. But then I think where she had that trigger from men, do you know what I mean? Like, who 100%. Would be to say that?
No, I agree. Peter Seams, he was 65. He's a retired merchant seaman who was travelling from Jupiter, Florida to Arkansas when he crossed paths with Warnos. His body was never found, but his car was discovered in Orange Springs, Florida, with Warnos' fingerprints in the interior door handle. Witnesses also reported seeing Warnos and her then-girlfriend, Tyra Moore, driving Seams' car and later abandoning it. The disappearance of Seams, despite the lack of body, further connected Warnos to the series of killings.
I was going to say, have we got anything on the bird, Christina Ritchie? Like, have we got any, like... Because I know the film was a lot to do with the love story, wasn't it? Of how she met this girlfriend and it pulled her out of the dark place. So she met her in, like, a bar and...
Well, we go into this a little bit.
Okay.
Troy Barres was a 50-year-old delivery truck driver from Ocala, Florida. Warnos shot him twice, and his body was found in a wooded area along State Road 19 in Marion County, Florida. Barres was last seen alive whilst driving on his delivery route, and when he failed to return, his employer reported him missing. His murder, like others, bore the hallmark of Warnos's method: multiple gunshot wounds, the abandonment of the body in a remote location.
Pattern.
There were no clear signs of sexual assault, further casting doubt on Warnos's claims of self-defence.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think, what is... signs of sexual assault, unless it's on her.
Well, yeah, surely it would be on her now.
But they're saying, like, there's just in the car, there's no signs of it, so, you know, it didn't happen. So it's kind of like that argument, well, there's no proof that it didn't happen.
I think exactly what you said earlier on is that I think it started out being treated like a piece of shit by men. I think she'd gone through that in, you know, her earlier life and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it just turned to anger.
Yeah. And then she's just thought, fuck it.
Fuck it. And, like, she was obviously getting by with, like, you know, like she was robbing the fellas, obviously, who she killed. But I think it was out of like a rage and a spite. And I just think her story is quite a sad story. And just because she's a female serial killer, I'm not trying to like
defend and be like, woo, women power.
I've always thought her story was a sad one and thought like, well, how do you know, being in it, like she must have felt so vulnerable being in these positions with many were like trying to rape and stuff. Like, she did turn to rage. I'm not saying it was okay to kill, but
you can kind of see why. Well,
yeah, like where it kind of came from. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Charles Humphrey was a 56-year-old retired Air Force major and former child abuse investigator. He was shot 6 times. So this is a little bit different, this one. His body was found fully clothed and his car was later discovered in Suwannee County. Humphrey's background as a child advocate and law enforcement officer made his murder particularly shocking, and his case helped shape public opinion against Warnos. So this is similar to last week where sex workers were getting killed, but then when an innocent person got killed,
it was like,
everyone was like, outraged. So this one was just a little bit different because he worked in child abuse. He was an investigator.
Yeah, he was an investigator.
And he was in the services. It's kind of like, oh my God, how shocking. Obviously, the other fellas getting killed is still awful, but like, this shaped the story in the press massively. There was no evidence that he had attempted to harm Warnos. Then how do you prove?
I wonder if this, I keep going back to the movie, right? So I've seen all the documentaries for Warnos Lover. Obviously, you keep going back to the film, but there is a scene in the film where, you know, you kind of get where she's coming from with the self-defense and stuff, because it's like horrific. And then there's this one fella who like pleads for his life and he hasn't done anything. He's just like, you know, got her out as like a sex worker and he genuinely wants sex. And she takes him in the middle of the forest and he pleads with her and he says he's got kids and all of that. I don't know if this is this fella.
It sounds like it could be.
And you feel like, oh my God, and you're like, no, don't kill him.
Don't do it, yeah.
And she does anyway, but I feel like at that point, as she just got that blinker on of like, I hate men.
Yeah, I think so. I think you she's know? Just tunnel vision for everyone. Yeah, I agree. He's picked me up and he could rape me.
Yeah.
He might not have tried, but he could have. So she's just like, fuck you. And she still, again, claimed that it was self-defense in this case as well, but...
And maybe, you know, in your head, again, not defending her, but maybe you have that like... auto thing of like going into self-defense mode if that's happened to you that many times, and like how scary that must have been for her, being on her own with these men who did definitely try and do horrible things to her.
I fully agree. Walter Ontario was 62. He was a trucker and security guard whose body was found nearly naked near a remote logging road in Dixie County, Florida. He'd been shot 4 times. Antonio's murder marked the final killing of Warnos' spree. I've got the hiccup, sorry. Too much wine.
Too much.
As the police were closing in on her by this point, his car was found 5 days later, further linking Warnos to the crime through witness sightings and forensic evidence. So the arrest. By late 1990, authorities were becoming increasingly aware of the pattern of murders of middle-aged men along Florida's highways. The discovery of several of the victims' personal belongings in pawn shops, combined with witness reports of women being seen in the victims' cars, led police to Eileen Warnos as a prime suspect. So they've linked her being in these pawn shops, pawning items that belong to them, and she's been seen with the victims' cars. As you know, she took the cars, used them, and then dumped them.
She was getting money, wasn't she, obviously, to like live.
Yeah, fund the life, basically. Warnos was arrested on January the 9th, 1991, at a bar in Port Orange, Florida. Which,
always them bars where like, you see them on films and you're like, did these bars actually
you're
exist?
Like, I'd love to go.
Them like bars with them doors.
Yeah, and there's always and someone like, just sat at the bar.
Yeah, in the corner, like, we leave need the bar to up. Actually go there.
I know, we do. We need to go to like little
podunk actually, towns. My mate's fella went on a stag do. I know it's not near there, but he went to Texas and he said them bars are like fully there.
Oh, I can imagine.
We need to go.
We don't. We'll do a tour of the US.
We're going to, if we do a tour of the US, what is that hotel, the Cecil?
Oh, Cecil Hotel.
We're staying the night.
I'm scared.
She wrote, but we
I won't stay. I'll go. We're but going. I can't sleep over.
No, we're staying. No. Oh. We'll do a live pod.
I'll have to be bevied.
Yeah.
Where was I up to? Sorry. At a bar in Port Orange, Florida, where she'd been living under an alias. Police also arrested her girlfriend,
right,
Tyra Moore, who later cooperated with authorities in exchange for immunity. Moore's cooperation proved critical in Warnos's eventual confession, a series of recorded phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
In a series of recorded phone calls, Moore persuaded Warnos to confess to the murders, which she did, claiming that each kill had been an act of self-defence against men who had tried to rape her. So this is where you're quite torn about the GF.
The girl, yeah. Like, so what I know from the girlfriend is that she met the girlfriend, like, quite earlier on, like, mm-hmm. in the murders. She fell in love. She was head over heels, Pisces, you know. And the girlfriend relied on her, and where she was so in love, and I suppose she'd
was,
done
the girl
this.
Was from, wasn't she from a normal family? And
yeah,
ran
she
away.
Was, yeah, yeah. She ran away, and she'd obviously, like, met Eileen, and Eileen had, like, taken care of her. And then I feel like where she was so in love and she hated these fellas, she looked at it as a way to, like, kind of impress this girl. Like
would have done anything
I'll
for
look
her.
Out for you. Yeah. I can get us a new hotel, a new car. Like, I'll look after you. And this girl went along with it, mate. Like, this girl, went, she knew what she was doing. I think she did get a little bit scared and stuff, but...
But that's why she, Alyssa, got these confessions to get immunity.
But I think it's sad.
Because she would have had charges against her for aiding and abetting and whatever.
I think it was quite...
And they could have even got her on, like, conspiracy to commit murder, like, which is a heavy, heavy sentence. They could have got her on a lock because she knew when she went, I'm going to work.
Knew.
I'm going to work.
But I think it was very, very sad. If you look into this, like, you know, this woman's never really had love.
No, she
and,
hasn't.
You know, this was... I don't know if it was a first love, but
this
was all she knew, you know what I mean? Yeah. And she had someone that, and I just find it like, I don't know, maybe I'm a psycho, but I find it dead
no,
sad.
No, I think we're allowed to find these situations sad.
I
you're
do
not
think
going,
it's sad.
Go ahead, Eileen. Like,
no.
You're not, you know that she's
Come
done wrong.
Go on, Eileen.
Go on, Eileen. No, you know what I mean? We're not saying that,
no.
But you're allowed to feel empathy.
Yeah.
You are, like, no one can tell you wrong. Like,
with this case, I always do feel empathy more than others. I don't know why.
Mm.
I don't know what it is. I just always feel like...
Well, there was loads... I was going to say, I'm going to go into, like, that a bit more because it did kind of divide a lot of people with what was right and what was wrong in this situation. So the trial and conviction I'm going to go into now. Eileen Warnos was charged with the murders of Richard Mallory, David Spears, Charles Carscadden, Walter Ontario, and Mike Antonio? Sorry. Though she eventually confessed to all seven killings. Her trial for the murder of Richard Mallory began on January 13th, 1992, in Volusia County, Florida.
God, that was two then.
Oh, was she? I wasn't born yet. I was born a year later.
Ooh.
I was a year later. Warnos's defence argued that she had acted in self-defence, but the prosecution portrayed her as a cold-blooded killer who murdered for financial gain. They pointed out that Warnos had robbed her victims, taken their cars and pawned their belongings, obviously, which led to her getting caught as well.
Yeah.
So you can't kind of deny that. The jury presented with evidence of Warnos's violent actions and her inconsistent statements about the nature of each killing. The prosecution also brought forward forensic evidence and eyewitness testimony linking her to the murders. So there's no way out here, like, she is banged to rights.
Yeah.
Notably, the fact that Warnos has shot several of her victims multiple times contradicted her claims of self-defence, which
Again,
you mentioned.
Again, but I think that was, like, out of hatred.
It went from self-defence to rage very, very quickly. On January the 27th, 1992, Eileen Warnos was convicted of first-degree murder for the death of Richard Mallory. The jury sentenced her to death. Warnos then pleaded guilty to the remaining murders, so she didn't have to do trial for all of the seven. One of them she was done for. She had the death sentence from that. She then admitted to the rest.
Why? Sorry, I'm not good at, like, the court kind of side. You're very good at that, but...
I mean...
Why would you... If you did that, what would that... If you're already maybe going to do the death penalty,
well,
what would that do?
That's why. What is the point? She's being convicted
What's
of
the
murder.
What's the point, or would it not, like... long it out?
Both. Cost the taxpayer money. She's basically, first case, because they will have to have done them separately. So she's gone to the first one, yeah. Well, she didn't say yeah, but she's gone. It was self-defence. She's got convicted of murder and got given the death penalty.
Yeah.
She can't die seven more times.
No, but...
Do you know what I mean? So then she's then
she
gone.
Would that not have, like, longed her life out if she kind of, like, went
possibly,
through it all?
Possibly, but the...
She couldn't be asked.
Possibly, or her defence has gone, look, there's no... What's the point? You're going to go through all these trials, relive all this trauma if you commit, if you admit guilt. And she's gone, yeah, I did it. So yeah. it's I think it's a mixture of saving money from seven different trials. She's got the death penalty at the first hurdle.
But why would you care about saving money if you're going to die?
Not her, the government. It costs the taxpayer.
And they care?
Yeah, like, of course. Like, the taxpayer...
Oh, well, of course they care.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
Why
so they will have gone...
Would she not have gone now how long it all?
Possibly. If she, we don't know her frame of mind, she could have gone, I'm getting the death penalty. Why would I even bother trying to... If she would have got manslaughter for the first one, of course you fight them all. But she was banged to right. She yeah. got it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, well, what's the point in going through six other trials when I did it?
Yeah.
You know? One second. Yeah, sorry. She was sentenced to death for the murder of Richard Mallory, and then she pled guilty to remainder murders, and then she received a total of six death sentences on top of that. Throughout her trial and imprisonment, Warnos underwent several psychiatric evaluations. Some experts diagnosed her with borderline personality disorder and antisocial behaviour. Antisocial personality disorder, whilst others suggested she suffered from severe post-traumatic stress and due to the trauma, obviously, of what she went through in her life.
Yeah.
I believe like that.
I believe,
for sure.
Yeah. She actually had a horrific life.
Awful. Like, we couldn't even imagine.
It, the life she had was pretty fucking shit.
I even think just even what sex was at 11 is horrific.
Yeah,
so.
Horrific.
She was using it to get fed and for drugs and to
drink.
Yeah, so
she didn't really know anything else.
No. Warnos herself often exhibited erratic behaviour, particularly in later years. She basically oscillated between claiming self-defence and then expressing remorse. So, like, those videos where she's, like, ranting and raving, like, they raped me and
I'm glad
I killed them men. But then the next minute she's like, I didn't mean to do it, but I'm a woman, I'm self-defence. So...
Yeah, there's actually, if you look, there's so many good documentaries and, like, interviews and everything with Eileen Warnos. Like, it's so fascinating. Like, you can see her actual, like, sitting there talking about it, can't
you?
Yeah,
well,
it's so interesting.
She's saying she killed them in cold blood.
Yeah.
And then the next minute, she's like, I don't want to live anymore, like, you know, for what I've done. And it just basically complicates the public perception of it because it's like...
There's amazing stuff out there to watch about her. Like, real-life footage.
Yeah.
Like, amazing.
And it is sad because she just... Bless her. After spending over a decade on death row, Eileen Warnos was then executed by lethal injection on October the 9th, 2002, at Florida State Prison. In her final days, Warnos fired her legal team, gave several interviews which she continued to express contradictory feelings about her crimes... and often stated that she wanted to die, viewing her execution as a form of relief from her troubled life. Her final words were, quote, I'd just like to say I'm sailing with the rock and I'll be back like Independence Day with Jesus, June the 6th, like the movie, Big Mothership and all, I'll be back, end quote.
I'll be there.
I'll be back.
Where are you, babe?
I mean, that's nuts, though. Like, she's obviously not well. Like,
no.
I get what she's saying, but like...
She's been through a lot, hon.
I know, it's bad. The case of Eileen Warnos remains as one of the most controversial in American criminal history, pardon me, sparking debates about gender, mental health and the death penalty and the circumstances that lead individuals to commit crimes.
Yeah.
As one of the few documented female serial killers, Warnos's life and actions challenge many stereotypes about serial killers who are overwhelmingly male. Her case also raised uncomfortable questions about the role of trauma, abuse and poverty in shaping criminal behaviour.
100%.
Because we always say nature, nurture. It's both. It's fucking both.
I mean, she's had a rough ride.
100%. Eileen Warnos's case, so this is kind of into the gender part of it now. Eileen Wuornos's case became a focal point for discussions on female serial killers, as her crime method and methods stood in contrast to the more commonly understood patterns of male serial killers. Unlike many male serial killers who typically target women in sexually motivated crimes, Wuornos's crimes were men, and she claimed self-defence as her primary motivation. This challenged the conventional understandings of female aggression and violence and prompted scholars and psychologists to examine how societal attitudes toward gender influence perceptions of criminality. So it's just basically saying, we know what men do, we know why they do it.
Yeah.
99% of the time, it's generally all the same.
Yeah.
MO, same reasons. His is very, very different. She's actively killing men, but then going, it was self-defence.
Mm.
But then obviously...
But I think a lot of it to do was as well was... then she kind of thought, oh yeah, like I'm killing this fella, I'm getting away with it and I'm getting money.
Yeah.
And she was skinned and she was she was robbing these fellas, you know. So she then twigged onto this, you know what I mean?
100%. Many observers, particularly feminists, argue that Wuornos's life of abuse, exploitation and desperation contributed significantly to her violent actions.
Well, yeah, this is where I'm saying.
They saw her as a product of society that failed her at every turn. From her traumatic childhood to her adult years as a homeless sex worker, and suggested that her killings were a distorted response to a lifetime of male violence and oppression. Agreed. Others, however, viewed her as manipulative and dangerous, and a manipulative and dangerous criminal who used her tragic backstory as an excuse for murder. This tension between victimhood and agency has defined much of the discourse around her legacy. And that is where I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, I do. I think
I'm so torn because the thing
it's a bit of both.
Please don't take this the wrong way. She's saying self-defence. But is someone that unlucky for seven men to all try and rape her? No. And I'm not laughing because I don't mean to laugh, but like
I agree, of course, mad
statistic. Like
every time it wasn't that, but I think she got the taste for it.
Yeah,
she had the hatred. She got the taste for it, and the hatred has come from a very sad place. And
oh, of course,
evil place,
unimaginable.
Being out on them streets and what she experienced. Not saying that we would do that, but how do you know what state your mind would go in if you were treated like that by...
I hope we never have
a number of people.
I hope we never ever have to put our heads in
your
that space.
Head might go into, like, fuck you. Mm. Like,
it's like that flight or fright. Like, what is it called?
Yeah, fight or flight.
Like, she's just gone, fight.
Then even with the most innocent of, like, victim that she might have come across... She was already in that, like...
Mind frame.
And it was like, I'm getting something from these. I'm moving a bit up in my life. I'm robbing them and I'm getting money. I'm getting a car. And then we need to come on to the big, big factor here is the bird. Like, we haven't spoke much about it, but she was funding this girl's life. And a lot of her drive was for this relationship. Yeah. And, like... Sadly, it was to keep her there.
Mm. But that's the thing, she was
trying to impress
her. She just never vocally said that. She weren't going, but I was doing it for the... Like, she was just like, fuck the man, they tried to rape me, so I killed him. We know.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's quite...
I think it's like common knowledge.
Like, she was happy, she met this girl, she was absolutely in love with her.
What about when the bird grassed her up in jail on the phone?
What about her? She grassed her up and she was done.
Mm.
That will have had effect on her. She will have been what the fuck.
But we
did keep in contact. But
we haven't spoken about that. So on the phone, like in jail, quite a lot up until she got put to death. The girlfriend, Christina Ritchie, or not really, was on the phone quite a lot, wasn't she? Recording. And you know she'd like been by her side this whole time and. Knew what she was doing and happy to live the life and Eileen like looked after her and then when she got sentenced or when she was in prison or whatever, she was on the phone, she was recording all the phone
but then
calls,
that's when it had to stop. Yeah, so when she trapped her, it was over.
And that's when at the point where I was like, oh my god,
I know it is sad. Wuornos's execution in 2002 reignited the national debate over the death penalty, particularly in cases involving individuals with significant mental health issues.
I remember this. They were all outside, like, protesting. And I remember that. Well, not that I was... Yeah. I was two or something.
But I remember this,
like, on the... Yeah, documentaries.
Her erratic behaviour during her time on death row, her frequent changes in legal strategy, and her final bizarre statement about being sailing with the Rock left many people questioning her mental competency.
Mm-hmm.
Some advocates argued that Warnock should have been spared the death penalty on the grounds of diminished responsibility, pointing to her documented mental health issues and her history of severe abuse.
Yeah.
Additionally, Warnock's gender played a role in the controversy. Female executions have historically been much rarer than male executions.
Was she kind of like one of the, not the first, obviously, ever, but no. Was she one of the biggest?
I think she was more one of the last. No, don't quote me on that, but I mean, that was 2002?
Like, she just was a big, but there hadn't been loads.
There is, but they're not always in the news.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's what's dead sad. There's hundreds of people on death row that we'll never ever hear about. They just go off.
Mm.
One second. Sorry, Warnock's case received significant media attention, partly because of the fact, obviously, that she was a woman. Critics argued that the state was using her as a symbol, executing her to make a point about equal treatment under the law.
Yeah.
Even as her mental health and trauma were overlooked. So.
Yeah, of like men and women.
They're just saying, like, well, yeah. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. Like, but at the same time, it isn't. Because that's.
It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman.
It shouldn't.
You shouldn't do what you're doing.
Yeah, but I think.
But.
I do believe, though. I'm very 50-50 on the death penalty, but I believe if you have got mental health problems and it's fact and you've been, you know, diagnosed and you're getting treatment, that means it's beyond your control.
Mm.
So that should you die from that? I don't know. Mm. Male, not even air, just anyone. If you are just an asshole who just does it for the
get
thrill
off
and
on
you're
it.
Sick and twisted.
And I don't think that was in this case.
No, I don't.
I don't think that's what I mean.
Then maybe, yeah, you know, there's more of a reason.
If it was like, you know, oh, so-and-so just gets off on it to be does it.
Just to be horrible.
That's why I'm giving him more empathy. I don't think it was that at all.
I agree. Eileen Warnock's story has been immortalised in books, documentaries and films, most notably the 2003 film Monster.
Unbelievable piece of film.
In which Charlize Theron plays Warnock.
Wow. She couldn't have done it any better.
There we are. Theron's performance earned her an Academy Award and the film brought a renewed attention to Warnock's life and crimes.
She should have got an Oscar.
Monster, I think Academy Award, like, and he wins the Academy Award.
But
I think
an
that
Oscar?
Is, I know, I don't know. I mean,
wow,
I should have checked that, but I thought they were the same thing.
Wow, like what she did in that is like...
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Monster played Warnock as a deeply flawed and damaged individual, whose crimes were inextricably linked to the violence she endured throughout her life. The film emphasised her relationship with Tyra Moore. She was renamed Shelby in the film.
Shelby, yeah, that was it.
Played by Christina Ricci, as Hannah's mentioned. And humanised Warnock, showing both her as a victim and a perpetrator of violence. The media's fascination with Warnock also contributed to her complex legacy. She was frequently portrayed as both man-hating monster and a tragic figure driven back to violence by a life of unimaginable hardship.
Mm-hmm.
This duality made her case a frequent subject of study for criminologists, psychologists and feminist scholars who continue to debate the motivations behind her killings and to the extent of which her actions were shaped by her environment to this day.
Yeah.
Warnock's case also highlighted the intersection of poverty, homelessness and sex work within violent crime. Living as a homeless sex worker within the margins of society, Warnock was part of a vulnerable and marginalised population which is often overlooked by law enforcement and social services. Her story forced the public to confront the harsh realities of life for women like her who were often subject to violence, exploitation and systemic neglect. Many argued that her descent into violence was a direct result of a society that failed to protect her,
mm-hmm.
pointing to the need for better social services, mental health care and support for vulnerable populations.
I suppose I suppose there wasn't a lot of mental health.
No, we say it, don't we? Oh, it was never a thing then. Now everyone's talking about it. So,
yeah.
But it's good that it raised that and people were onto it. The case also had implications for how society views and treats sex workers. Warnos claimed that many of her victims had attempted to sexually assault her or abuse her, and while some of these claims were disputed, her case highlighted the inherent dangers faced by women in the sex trade. It raised awareness of violence that sex workers often endure and contributed to discussions about their need for better protection and legal reforms for sex workers. Again, amen.
Yeah.
Right, so to conclude, Ali Warnos remains a complex and controversial figure in American criminal history.
She's up there, like, isn't
100%.
She?
100%. Her life of abuse, trauma and mental illness provides a tragic backdrop for her violent actions, leaving many to wonder if her crimes could have been prevented had she received the care and support she so desperately needed. At the time, her cold-blooded killings and contradictory behaviour made it difficult for many to view her as a victim. Her case continues to be studied as an example of the intersections of gender, mental health, trauma, and violence in the context of serial murder. Warnos's legacy is a reminder of the importance of understanding the broader societal factors that can contribute to criminal behaviour.
Sorry, how was she? Was she lethal injection?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I'd prefer that. When we were in the exhibition.
I went in the gas chamber.
I was like, let me get a picture. There was they had all methods there, like the firing squad.
Yeah, I'd want the injection.
I don't know.
I said the firing squad and you were like, no.
No, I thought I would prefer the firing squad because it's just like, you said, what if they miss you and get like your arm?
No, you said that.
Oh, did I say that?
Yeah.
But with the firing squad.
But I don't want like the lecky chair with Percy not wetting my sponge.
Oh, yeah.
No.
And you go on fire.
No, I'd want the lethal injection.
I think I would.
But what does it feel like?
You know, with the firing squad, usually there's like 5 or 10 shooters.
Oh.
And maybe. No, but most of them are given blanks and only one is given a bullet, but they don't know which one.
No!
So that they're all told to aim at the heart. So there's going to be 5 or 10 people shooting at the heart, but then it means that you don't live with the guilt of like knowing you've killed someone. Because imagine being job title... executioner, like, come on, that's gonna fuck you up. So
yeah.
I quite, not that I like it,
that's
but
cute,
it's like good that they'll say, right, you've all given a gun, someone's got a blank, like, yeah, all of
course,
you have
you don't know who it is,
so yeah,
right, I'd have to go with the lethal injection. But what do you think that feels like?
Well, it's meant to be like sedate, yeah, put you to sleep.
Oh.
And then while you're sedated, it then
slowly
shuts
the organ.
Yeah, but
injection,
there's been quite a few, even quite recently. That fella.
Hey, you said, have you ever seen me do this?
When?
When I went.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
Well, that's why you've done it. Lethal injection.
But yeah, lethal injection.
There was a case. We'll probably bring it up at some point because I'll probably do like botched bloody executions as a topic. Mm. But because that would be good. There was one recently within like the past year.
Percy.
Was in the past like year or so of a fella who had a botched execution.
No.
And he had one. Previous, so this was a second, and this is a real case in America.
The
drugs just didn't work properly. Yeah, like, have you seen Law Abiding Citizen?
So is it you feel it?
No, the first one's meant to like numb you, the second one does something, the third
so
you one
don't
kills
have you.
No, they're meant to be, all of them are meant, there's a word for it, it's meant to be humane. Sorry, I just. Yeah, but they're all like the gas chamber. You fall asleep, you die. The electric chair, it's meant to kill.
I was in the gas chamber the other day. No, I'd have the lethal injection.
But even like the lucky chair, it's meant to not be.
It's
cruel and unusual punishment. Like, they can't do that. It has to be humane. And that's the argument, because how can you prove that you dying was humane because only you felt it? Mm. So that's why there's a big debate about the death penalty, because. How do you humanely kill someone? Warnos's legacy is a reminder of the importance of understanding broader societal factors that can contribute to criminal behaviour, especially in cases involving women who have been subject to extreme violence and hardship. Her story is also a stark commentary on how the criminal justice system deals with issues of mental health and illness and trauma, particularly those from marginalised communities. In the end, Eileen Warnos's life and death offer a profound reflection on the complexities of crime, punishment, and human suffering.
Oh.
And that is why.
We don't talk to strangers. Oh, babe. Ever. This case still.
I know,
like,
it affects you.
It affects me, yeah. I don't know why it does. It just more than other Serial killers, it really does. It like touches me. I don't know why it is, but I just really empathise with it. I don't know what it is. I just think
in the feels.
I know a lot of people have been through shit and a lot of people have had like really horrific childhoods and stuff, but I just think her whole life, even into an adult, I think it was all shit.
Yeah.
And I just think she didn't know right from wrong. And you know, how are we meant to know how you would act? And I just think, yeah, wow. I feel dead sorry for her. What she did wasn't right, but I feel dead sorry for her. And yeah, if you want to watch this film, you really need to. It's fucking unbelievable. Monster.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Charlize Theron is just absolutely unbelievable in this film. You need to watch it. You won't even believe it's the same person. She did it so well. And anything on Eileen Wuornos is so interesting because
there's
so much real. It's always better when there's real footage. Oh. There's real footage. And like, our Eileen. Come on, Eileen. She's fucking talking.
Come on, Eileen.
She's talking, isn't she? She's telling us. But yeah, like, I don't know. This is always one where I feel like,
yeah,
bless you,
it leaves you feeling a certain type
like,
of way.
Yeah, like, obviously, dead sad for the victims, but RIP, Eileen, because I don't think you had it easy.
I don't think she should have been put to death.
I think it's exactly what I've said this whole podcast is that she had it bad. I think she then turned to the hate, which isn't an excuse to murder people, but I think, in that headspace.
We can't comprehend that.
So I would just say, like, wow, what a shit life you've been dealt.
I know.
And sorry to all the victims and that, but...
I know.
Sly on Eileen. Soz.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed this episode.
And that is why you...
Don't talk to strangers! But, genuinely, leave reviews, do all the things, like, subscribe, you can listen...
Get a bevian.
Yeah, you can grab a glass of red while you're listening. You can follow us on Instagram as at Don't Talk to Strangers Podcast. You can email us at don'ttalktostrangerspod@gmail.com.
Speak to us.
DM us.
Don't DM us shit, because we'll blank you.
I know, because I can't take it.
We'll just block you.
But yeah, thank you very much.
See you later, Charles.